Hey, this is Leo for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to rant against morality. All right, I get to be a little self-righteous in this one, so I'm excited. Let's get started. Basically, what I want to show you is that your model of morality, your morals of what you think is right and wrong, good and evil, is actually having the opposite effect that you want it to have, and it's severely stunting your growth and psychological well-being, and it's keeping you from being fulfilled, and it's keeping you from reaching your full potential. That's my message in a nutshell, but now there's a lot of details that we need to go into to explain why this is, because this is a very counterintuitive thing. Most people cannot wrap their mind around what I'm about to say. This episode is very, very foundational. This is not just philosophy here. This is going to be very practical. I'm going to show you with this episode and the upcoming episode in the future, I'm going to show you how much of your life is being damaged in a very practical, very concrete way. And how this is slowing you down and creating a lot of the problems that you have in your life. Problems like guilt, shame, blame, victim mentality, righteousness, anger, and all this kind of stuff. So let's begin at the beginning. A developmental psychologist by the name of Lawrence Kohlberg did some research in the 1950s on morality. And what he discovered by interviewing lots of different subjects is he discovered there's basically stages, kind of preset stages of morality through which a human psyche evolves and develops. Basically, there are three stages. So the first stage is pre-conventional morality. The second stage is conventional morality. And then his third final stage was post-conventional. What are these in a nutshell? Basically, you begin at the pre-conventional stage, and that's the most basic, most crude form of morality. And what that is a sort of stick and carrot version of morality, which means that you act to not do wrong so that you don't get punished. That's kind of the very, very basic level. The next level of evolution up from that, and this is still pre-conventional, is the carrot rather than the stick, which means that you do good so that you can get rewards, whether it's approval from others or patting yourself on the back, this kind of stuff, right? So both of these, the carrot and the stick, comprise pre-conventional morality. So that's kind of where you start. Then you evolve, and not everyone evolves past this. A lot of people stay stuck there forever, right? But if you keep growing your psyche and keep developing and you keep maturing, then you evolve to the next stage, which is conventional morality. And what this is basically conformist, authoritative forms of morality. So conformity means that the reason that you do something that you're supposed to do, the reason you do good, is because if you didn't, then you would not be conforming, and therefore you would arouse the disapproval of others around you. So you're trying to conform. And then you can grow and evolve a little bit higher than that, still staying in the conventional stage, and you get into the authoritative forms of morality, which means that the reason that you do something or don't do something is because some higher authority told you what's right and what's wrong. So this higher authority might be the Bible, might be the Pope, might be the U.S. Constitution, or your parents, or whoever. All right? And then if you evolve past this stage, now we're getting out of conventional and we're going into post-conventional. In post-conventional, what you have is you have social contract theory. And what this is, this comes to us basically from the European Enlightenment, which, by the way, has nothing to do with actual enlightenment that I talk about in other episodes. European Enlightenment was just like a philosophical movement in the 17 and 1800s. But what that is it arose, this idea arose of social contract, which basically means that if you're a member of a community, the reason that you want to act moral and ethical is because, you know, we're all in this together. We're all in the same boat, so to speak. And even just by being born and being part of whatever nation you're a part of, that nation is based upon social contract, which basically means that, you know, we've kind of come together and we've mutually agreed, whether in an explicit way or in an implicit way, we've agreed to work together and to not work against each other. And so because of this, we want to do good and we don't want to harm others. And our morals are grounded in that. Okay. And then if you evolve a little bit past social contract, then you get to Kohlberg's highest stage, which is principle-based morality. And what this means is you act based on internal principles. So all the external rewards and all the external rules, you've internalized them in a sense where you are acting on your own conscience and on your own sense, your intuition of what's right and what's wrong. And you no longer need to appeal to any authorities or to any conventions or to any kind of social contracts. And that's it, at least for Kohlberg. Now, what's interesting to me is that Kohlberg left out the most important stage of morality, the highest stage, which is what I call transcendent morality. And transcendent morality is what I'm going to talk about in the second half of this episode. But just in a nutshell, what it is it's basically it's a consciousness of ultimate truth and ultimate reality. And when you become fully conscious or enlightened, then you break down the boundary between self and other. And literally what happens is that everything becomes you. Everything becomes the self. And there is a complete and utter surrender of you to reality, the larger force of reality, or as some might want to call it, God, or whatever you want to call it, nature, reality, existence. You basically surrender to this higher power, and you act now compassionately towards everyone and everything because you literally perceive the entire world as your body. It's a very radical thing. And more than that, than just that, you recognize that all of existence is basically a giant ball of love, of unconditional love. And what you do is you surrender your ego to such an extent that everything is unconditionally loved by you. Even the good, I mean, especially the good, but even the evil, even the bad stuff, even the stuff that looks ugly or looks vile or looks immoral, you even start to love that because you see it as a unity. There are no divisions. It's one giant unity. And so you surrender to that and you approach all of reality with unconditional love. And that's transcendent morality is what that is. So we'll circle back to that in a little bit, but let's talk about traditional or conventional morality first. So this is all the stuff that is not transcendent morality. Now, there's a lot of problems with traditional morality, which I want to talk about. Traditional morality is where 99.99999% of people live. Very few people ever live to get to transcendent morality. So the problem with traditional morality, though, is that it's actually very damaging. It promotes unconscious obedience to rules or authority figures or even to your own intuitions about what's right and what's wrong. The problem here is that it's done in an unconscious way. It's done in a dogmatic way. You're following a certain set of rules. And what happens when you do this is that it leads to moralization. Moralization. And this moralization can happen in very gross, obvious ways, or it can happen in extremely subtle ways. And what moralism is it's a rigid set of do's and don'ts. And it's a sort of judgmental attitude towards reality where you're dissecting, you're cutting and dicing up reality, which is one unified whole in truth. You're fragmenting reality. And then you're saying, well, these things on this side, these things are good things. And those things on that side, those things are evil things. And maybe you carve out some space in the middle for some neutral things. But basically, that's kind of your spectrum. And what happens is that you start to see the world in a very black and white sort of way. And anything that's on this side, the evil side, you judge it. And you move away from it and you deny it within yourself. And so your reality becomes fragmented. And from this comes moralism. Now, you might say, well, Leo, moralism has nothing to do with me because it sounds like you're talking about like religious morality, but I'm not religious. I'm secular or I'm an atheist. So, Leo, this doesn't apply to me, right? Be very careful about that kind of defense because you're dismissing something very deep and important here. Actually, what I'm talking about applies to you, even if you're an atheist, even if you're secular, even if you're scientifically minded or rationally minded and you don't believe in religion at all. It still applies to you because you moralize nonetheless, unless you've done a lot of self-development work. You moralize a lot, whether you're religious or not. That's what I mean by very subtle forms of moralizing. And I'll give you some examples as we go on here. But let's give you some examples of the obvious sources of moralization. So obviously, all the religious sources. So this is actually one of the reasons that atheists and rational people try to stay away from religion is because there's so much moralism within religion. So Christianity, Catholicism. I know Catholicism is a form of Christianity, but Catholicism is an especially moralistic form of Christianity. So it bears being called out on its own. Also, Islam. Islam is extremely moralistic in the way that it's practiced in the Middle East. Even Buddhism. Buddhism isn't even supposed to be a religion. Nevertheless, Buddhism tends to veer towards moralism when it's practiced by people. Judaism is moralistic as well. So basically, all the major religions are moralistic. Also, there's like these ideologies. Ideologies here in the West, in the United States, like conservatism, political conservatism, or cultural conservatism. People like Jerry Falwell and Rush Limbaugh and Pat Robertson, these talk show hosts or conservative figures basically in the public. So they do a lot of moralizing, and a lot of their ideas and ideologies are based upon kind of moralization or a certain moral authority that they have over their constituents or their followers or in contrast to the people that they criticize. But it's not just conservatism, it also happens in liberalism too. So liberals and hippies and green people, environmentalist people, they also moralize. Just on different grounds, in a different way, but they still moralize, when someone tells you that you shouldn't eat meat because of this, 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 and this. And you shouldn't pollute the water, and you're bad for polluting the water, and those evil corporations on Wall Street, and how much money they make, and how they neglect the poor and the destitute and the crippled, that's also moralization. So it happens on both sides of political aisles. And here now we're getting into probably something that's more practical for you, because most of you guys that watch me aren't, to like fundamentalist religious, I assume. But the secular forms of moralism. Examples of this include all the moralism that goes on in your family. So when you were growing up, and whatever family you're in right now, if you're older, you're probably still seeing your folks once in a while, or your siblings. But there's a whole little, like a little system of morality within your family that got enforced from the very beginning when you were born. And probably still gets enforced today. And that probably creates a lot of tension for you in your life. And many of those rules laid down by your parents, you're still either acting to align with those in your life as an adult, or you're acting and rebelling against them as an adult. So either way, it's affecting you. Also, in your intimate relationships, moralism becomes a huge potential problem. Because let's say you're married, or you're in a long-term relationship with a girlfriend or boyfriend. Okay, what's going to happen there is again, because that's also like the new family that you're starting your own family basically. And there now you're going to be the one who sets various rules. And of course, your partner is going to have different notions than you about the kind of rules that should be set. And so there's going to be an argument there going on, a kind of a debate back and forth that's going to stretch over the course of years and decades between you two about what the rules should be and who's disobeying the rules and who's being unfair and who's being at fault and who's guilty and who's innocent, right? So that whole discussion and that whole argument will go on with you two. And that can lead to a lot of frustration, could lead to a lot of divorce. A lot of divorces happen because of the moralizing that goes on between couples and relationships. Also, there's a certain moralization that happens with cultural etiquette. You know, cultural etiquette is stuff like, you know, should I bow? Should I say thank you? Should I say please? Should I hold the door open? Should I not cut off some guy in traffic? Or should he not cut me off? This kind of stuff, you know, just kind of like little rules that aren't very religious. They're not very charged, but still you can see how, you know, if you hold a belief such as like, nobody is supposed to ever cut me off in traffic, and then somebody does, then that's going to make you angry. And you're going to suffer on account of that because of your moralism there. And then, of course, the most important form of moralism is probably the one that goes on inside yourself. Moralism that you created for yourself. So the rules you have set for yourself outside of all these areas I've talked about, but you as a human being, as you were growing up and as you were a teenager, you made certain decisions about what should and what should not occur in life. What's right and what's wrong? What's fair and what's not fair? And these rules, as you've made them, you've applied them to others in order to judge others. And then, of course, you, by necessity, your mind has to apply them to itself, too. Because, you know, if you judge someone for being evil because he ripped somebody off and stole some money from them, if you then, 5 years later, go and try to rip somebody off, then your mind will say, oh, then that means I'm evil because I judge that other person as being evil, right? And so now you have this to contend with. So those are some examples of where moralism occurs in our lives. But let's discuss now what the problem is with moralism, because it's not obvious. You might say, well, Leo, you know, moralism is a good thing because we have rules. If we didn't have rules, then it would just be chaos and anarchy. Is that what you're advocating? Before I address some of those objections, which I will, let's talk about the problems with moralism. The problem here is not religion. Make sure you don't make that mistake. It's not a religious problem. This is a much broader problem than just religion. The problem is mechanicalness. The problem is setting down a simplified black and white rule for how life should be, and then expecting life to go according to that rule, and then also expecting yourself to now rigidly behave in a mechanical, unconscious way according to that rule. What I said is very profound. It takes a bit of thinking to unpack all that, right? What do I mean by mechanicalness and unconsciousness and all these kind of terms? What I mean is that to actually be moral and good, you need to do it from a place of consciousness, of awareness. In the present moment, you have to be aware of the situation, and from that comes the greatest good. But when you just have a brute force rule that you have been following your whole life, and you have a whole set of these rules, and you believe that the rules constitute morality, then what happens is that you are just blindly following bureaucratic rules. And a lot of times these rules are so simplistic that they don't actually fit real life situations. And also you can apply these rules in a mechanical nature, in a mechanical manner, to the point where you apply the rule and you actually end up using the rule to act immorally. That's the problem with rules. That's the problem with dogma. That's the problem with beliefs. This goes way beyond just doing good or doing bad. This goes very very deep to the very root of what you think reality is and how reality is structured. Your whole model of reality is tied in with your model of morality. The rules you make are actually made out of fear. Now, the stuff I'm going to be talking about right now is going to be largely unconscious stuff, stuff that you probably haven't become aware of yet. But keep in mind that everything I'm talking about is something you can look and investigate and see for yourself. I'm not just giving you some theory of mine about morality. I'm telling you what you will find if you just take it upon yourself to empirically investigate how some of these things work in your day-to-day life. This is not theory. This is not philosophy. Don't confuse it with that. The rules, what I'm claiming is that the rules that you set for what's right and what's wrong are actually made out of fear. They're driven by your ego. Okay? You have an insecure, neurotic ego that acts defensively to protect itself and to protect its model of the world and of reality and of life. And your identity, your personal identity, who you actually believe you are, this needs to be defended, right? Because your identity, what it is it's a partial, incomplete picture of what you actually are in this world, right? What you've done is you've fragmented a unified reality. You fragmented it, and then you said, this is me, this is how I have to be, and everything else is not me. So by creating a strong you, a strong identity, a strong ego, that necessarily means that now you have to be on the defensive to protect this little pocket or corner partition of reality from the rest of reality, from encroaching on it, right? It's almost as though you've cut a hole in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Imagine this. You cut a hole in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and now you've cut it like a mile deep to the very bottom of the ocean floor. If you cut it, though, what happens? You have to have like walls, very, very strong walls, like reinforced with tons of concrete and steel to keep this thing from collapsing in on itself, because that's the natural tendency, right? Because the entire force of all the water on Earth, basically, of all the oceans on Earth, is crushing in the sides of that hole that you've tried to cut out. So you're going to need to work really, really hard to cut out that hole. And if there's ever a leak, you're going to be always on the defensive, you know, plugging every little hole that you find within that concrete structure that supports the space that you've carved out of the ocean. That's basically what's going on with you, with your ego. So this kind of ego now, because it's very rigid, it's not flexible, and it's unwilling to really investigate what the ego is and what reality is, because if it did, it would realize that this whole is completely artificial and unnecessary, right? The reality is that you're the entire ocean. You don't need to carve out a hole in the ocean. You are the whole ocean. But most people aren't aware of this. It takes a lot of work to become aware of that. So what they do now is they use morality as a tool of the ego to erect barriers, to reinforce this identity. And this starts with you very, very young. So when you were just a baby, when you were 1 year old, already your parents were using morality to manipulate you, to get you to do what they believed was right and wrong. So from your very birth, you've basically been imprinted and indoctrinated with a set of what's right and what's wrong. And this went like straight into the very core of the operating system of your mind, so deep in there that you cannot even fathom how foundational that was to the way you relate to the life now, the way you relate to people, to life, to yourself, to situations in the world. All of that has been skewed and distorted from the very beginning of your birth by the manipulations that have happened to you by your parents, right? So when your parents said, oh, don't do that. Oh, good girl, bad boy, this kind of stuff, right? You shouldn't eat candy. And, you know, you should be good at church. And, you know, you shouldn't look at pornography. And, you know, you shouldn't touch alcohol. And you shouldn't watch so much TV. And you should do your homework. And you should do this and you should do that. That's moralization, right? And notice that this is, it starts completely irreligious. So it's not religious, it's a-religious, right? These kinds of things like don't eat candy, don't watch too much TV, these are just rules laid down by your parents because, you know, you're being a little brat and they want to control you so that you don't get on their nerves. It's just a very simple thing like that. And then it starts and it continues for your entire childhood into your teenage years. When you become a teenager, you start to rebel against all that stuff. You start to kind of form an identity of your own. But still, largely, even if you rebel against some values, largely you're still on board with the majority of the values that your parents taught you, what you think is right and wrong. And for you, those things are now a part of reality. You don't see it as just an opinion that stealing is wrong. You think that that's actually true. It's true that stealing is wrong. It's true that murder is wrong. That's how your mind thinks of it. The reason it thinks of it that way is because it was imprinted into your mind at a time when you had no rational capacities whatsoever. So it's really deep in there. It's really deep in there. Now, you might say, well, Leo, what's wrong with, you know, having some rules? You know, isn't it good that my parents told me not to eat so much candy? Yeah, maybe, you know, some of these rules can be useful. I'm not saying they aren't, but notice what they fundamentally are is that they're manipulations made by egos to get the outcomes they want. So yeah, of course, these rules are very effective in certain contexts. The problem happens that when you grow up and you have a lot of these rules, and what starts to happen is that your rules start to conflict and contradict. And the force of that ocean crushing in the sides of this identity hole that you've created inside the ocean, it starts to become painful. It creates suffering. And it starts to ultimately crack and starts to leak through there. And it becomes a full-time job sometimes to keep this structure from collapsing. So the other problem with this is that a lot of these rules are external rules. So they build within you a sense of extrinsic motivation. So it's like, don't do this, otherwise you're going to get spanked. Or otherwise you're going to go to hell. And the problem with that is that you're motivated. You know, after a couple decades of this kind of talk, now your mind becomes motivated by negative neurotic motivation. You don't do things because you actually love them or because you inherently care about doing them. You do them because you have to. You do them because you should. You do them because it's a law of God or a law of society or something like that. What's the problem there? Well, the problem there is that if you're doing something because you should, notice that that necessarily implies that you actually want to do something opposite to that. So if you should not have sex, and you're struggling with that, that means you actually want to have sex. And if you should not eat candy, that means there's actually a force within you, a force within your mind that wants to eat candy. So what's happening here is that you're fragmenting yourself. You're creating disintegrity. You're out of integrity with yourself because there's a complicated slew of forces within you that motivates the average human being. There's good forces and bad forces. There's evil ones. There's noble ones. There's petty ones. There's generous ones. There's selfish ones. All sorts. You have all sorts of ideas floating through your mind. You know, sometimes you have an idea that you want to kill somebody. Now, you probably don't want to follow through on that, and you probably won't, but you still have the idea. Now, the problem happens is that when you try to deny that you have the idea that you want to kill someone, that's when you get into neurosis, because what you're doing is you're actually creating a shadow. So see, the ego, not only is the ego a problem, but it gets worse. It gets a lot worse. The ego has a shadow. The shadow of the ego is all the stuff that you deny about yourself, but that's actually inherent in your identity. So stuff like, I want to have sex. If you're a religious person, you probably have a shadow of your ego. Your ego believes that sex is wrong, or somehow it's dirty. But then the shadow part of that is that actually you want to have sex. And actually, because you deny yourself sex, you actually want it even more. You see? So it's kind of like the opposite side of the coin. If you create one rule, or if you create one judgment, or if you say something is good, that necessarily means that the opposite of that is bad. See? People tend to think like, well, but it's good to say that things are good, because that allows me then to not do the bad things. No, the problem is that when you say something is good, that necessarily means you're going to do bad things, or you're going to repress bad things, right? You have to repress them. There has to be a denial of reality here. And that's the real tragedy of all this, is that moralization leads to a denial of reality. And when you deny reality and you try to fight against reality, you always lose. Always. You always lose. It's just a matter of time. And that's a big problem. A big practical problem in your life. Another interesting tidbit here is that the moralist, the person who acts very moral, they derive a secret pleasure out of doing so. And again, it's an egoic pleasure. It's kind of like one of those dirty little egoic pleasures. And that's the pleasure of feeling self-righteous. So when you condemn a terrorist, or when you condemn Nazis, or when you condemn a pedophile, you know, these are very easy things to condemn. And you might think like, well, I'm being noble, you know, I'm fighting against the Nazis, and I'm fighting against the communists, and I'm fighting against the heathens, and I'm fighting against the infidels and stuff. But see, what you're actually doing there is your ego is kind of like gloating. It's basking in its own egoness. And then, of course, what that does is that just exacerbates all the problems that come with ego. But this is a subtle thing. It's a subtle thing because the ego says that this kind of gloating is actually good. It justifies it by saying, well, but, you know, I do good in my life, and look at those Nazis, and look at those terrorists, and look at what they do. Look at me compared to them. Look how much better I am. See, the ego's whole game is to aggrandize itself, to feel powerful, and to feel alive. Because the fundamental problem of the ego is that the ego is an illusion. So it has to fight all the time to create a sense of reality. If it stops fighting, then it literally dies. So that's what's going on there at a very deep level. All the stuff I'm talking about is extremely advanced stuff. I mean, it'll take you years, maybe decades, to put all this stuff into practice, to actually see how it all works in your life. It's all very very subconscious, like buried deep in your mind. All this stuff I'm telling you is stuff you're not supposed to know about yourself. Right? It's the ego's job to prevent you from ever hearing what I'm saying right now. So let's get back to the point of the problem of morality, or the problem of moralizing, rather. The other problem with moralizing is that it leads to hypocrisy. So of course, and this is a, you know, very interesting phenomenon that you get to see with televangelist preachers and certain conservative politicians or radio show hosts, is, you know, they're very moralistic, and they tell you, you know, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that, and you shouldn't have sex and you shouldn't drink, and you should be religious and pious and generous and selfless. And then we discover that this preacher has been caught with a hooker doing cocaine, you know, and having gay sex, this kind of thing. And that's not an accident. That is actually hastened by his moralism. It's hastened by it. Because someone who's a preacher and really preaches against something and calls something evil, that person is denying that aspect of reality and that aspect of himself. Kind of interesting. So one problem here is that it leads to hypocrisy, and hypocrisy is a painful condition to be in. It also backfires. So moralism backfires on you, and whatever vices you have become intractable after you've moralized to other people. So, you know, if I'm greedy, and I publicly announce how bad and evil greed is, then what's likely to happen is that now I have to hide my own vice of greed. And when I hide it, that means I can't observe it. I can't be conscious of it. That means I can't actually work through it and outgrow it and integrate it as I do self-actualization work. And so what's going to happen is that decades will pass and that greed will just kind of rot and fester and it'll get worse and worse and worse rather than better. Also, what happens with moralism is a lot of guilt, shame, hatred, and judgment happen. Right? So if you're looking for a cure to your guilt or to your shame or to your hatred of other people or yourself, and you know, I have a lot of episodes that talk about the dangers of judgment and why judgment is something you should think about letting go of. Here's the key. Drop your moralism. Drop your moralism. If you moralize, you will, by necessity, feel guilty, shameful, angry, and judgmental. You cannot avoid that. And by moralizing here, I don't just mean stop preaching to other people. You might say, well, Leo, you know, I don't moralize to people. I don't really go around and preach to people, you know, about the evils of sex. That's a very gross example. Now I'm talking about very subtle things, subtle ways in which you moralize. Like when you tell yourself you shouldn't eat that donut at work. Or when you tell yourself you shouldn't be so lazy with your schoolwork. Or when you tell yourself, you know, you have to go to the gym. You have to go to the gym. You can't miss a single day at the gym. Or when you tell yourself, you know, my girlfriend, she shouldn't be talking to other guys. She shouldn't. That's not right. Or, you know, you might say, you know, that my friend is being disrespectful to his parents. He shouldn't be so disrespectful to his parents. He should be more loyal and more generous to his parents. And, you know, those politicians, you know, the politicians, they should be more honest. They shouldn't be so greedy. All of that is moralism. And you do it. You do a lot of it. You do a fucking ton of it. In ways you can't even imagine yet how subtle this is. You do it externally. You also do it internally. You do it to yourself. Every day you wake up, I challenge you, from the moment you wake up, your first thought when you wake up is probably a moralization. You're probably already telling yourself, oh man, I should have gotten up 10 minutes earlier. Oh man, you know, I should have done my homework yesterday. Or, you know, oh man, you know, that person should have done something for me and he didn't do it. All of that is moralizing. And the problem with this is that you're going to feel guilty, but also you're going to have low self-esteem because you're going to be out of integrity, which necessarily leads to low self-esteem. Also, it leads to self-hatred, right? Because there are facets of yourself that you don't accept. Also, it leads to self-sabotage. If you wonder why you have difficulty motivating yourself to do stuff or why you do something, but then you kind of do the opposite of it the next day, like you go to the gym, but then you pig out, or you eat healthy and then you pig out, or you do a lot of work and then you get lazy. If you have all these kind of motivation problems, here's a really big reason why. And you're not going to fix them until you drop your moralizing. Also, if you have anxiety, general fear, where do you think that comes from? That comes from moralizing. Also, if you have stress, you feel overwhelmed all the time, that also comes from moralizing. So a lot of very painful stuff comes from moralizing. Moralizing basically is a perfect recipe for disastrous suffering in your life. And then, of course, all this leads to victim mentality. If you feel like a victim, oh man, you moralize a lot. You moralize a lot. What's interesting about moralizing, not only can it be kind of like, it can take two forms, basically. So one form is the kind of form where you're the self-righteous moralizer, and you tell basically other people what not to do. So you say, you know, you tell that person who's having too much sex, you tell them, you know, don't have so much sex. Look at me. I'm the perfect example of someone who doesn't have too much sex. And, you know, you shouldn't drink so much. And I'm the perfect example of someone who doesn't drink. So this kind of ego, it aggrandizes itself. The victim mentality ego kind of does the opposite. It kind of uses this moralizing against itself. So it tells itself something like, oh, I should not have so much sex. Oh, you know, I shouldn't be such a lazy person. You know, I shouldn't be so careless in my relationship. You know, I should be more loving. You know, I should be better at work. I shouldn't make mistakes at work. I should get better grades at school. And on and on and on it goes, right? Both of these forms are moralization, even though they're kind of opposite on the surface. And then, of course, you know, if you've ever wondered why human history is filled with all sorts of mass horrors, like the Holocaust and the Spanish Inquisition and terrorism and, you know, like the suppression of minorities, racism, slavery, exploitation, colonialism, eradication of the Native American populations of the United States. Why is that? Moralism. Largely because of moralism. Because when you mechanically follow rules, what happens is disaster. Inevitably, it leads to disaster. Because you're judging evil, and when you judge evil, you necessarily demonize the other person or situation. And then when you demonize them, you no longer can treat them humanely. Which means you cannot be moral to them. See? Judgment and moralization radicalizes you. And when it radicalizes many people under a common ideology, that leads to the greatest horrors of human history. So actually, morality is directly responsible for the greatest horrors and evils of mankind. And the reason all of this happens is because you deny and reject reality. That's your Achilles heel here. And this is the grave sin that you commit against reality, is that you deny and reject it. This is what happens when you fragment a unified whole. Shit starts to hit the fan very quickly, and it leads to a very messy situation. Brad Blanton, a psychologist, writes a lot about this, and I like the way he puts it. He says that the opposite of moralism is integrity. When you are whole, what you've done is you've owned the light parts of you and the dark parts. The ego and the shadow have been unified and integrated. And then you are free to act naturally, spontaneously, without guilt or shame. Your actions are not good or bad. You yourself are not a good or bad person. That itself is an identity. That's an ego thing. To consider yourself a good or a bad person. You're none of those in reality. What you do is you transcend the entire paradigm of good and bad. And you start to see that this is a childish, immature game that you play. And that it's time to put the game to an end. And when you do that, you become an emotionally mature adult. And then true morality comes effortlessly to you. Pretty cool. So let's discuss true morality, or what I call transcendent morality. For people who've been moralizing themselves their whole lives, this is a very counterintuitive notion. It's a very unorthodox and a very threatening notion because it's extremely radical. It's almost the exact opposite of everything you think morality is. And by the way, what's really fascinating about this, the whole irony of this, is that all religious morality, all traditional morality, is based and derived from transcendent morality. So everything that Jesus taught, that the Buddha taught, that Muhammad taught, that Moses or Abraham taught, all these things, you know, the rules that they set down, these rules were sort of designed for the unconscious masses. But, you know, these rules were set down very early in history. And these leaders who set these rules down, they actually had access to some degrees of transcendent morality, which I'm going to discuss here in a second, what that is. But they had access to that, see? And what they did is they, history didn't go far enough yet. They didn't have the luxury of seeing the horrors that unconscious masses would produce with mechanical rules, right? They didn't have the wisdom of history. We have it now. So, which is why I would say that someone like Moses or Abraham or Muhammad or the Buddha or Jesus, if they lived in modern times, they would denounce every single rule and law that has been attributed to them. If they saw the horrors that it would produce. So here's what these sages and saints actually tapped into. And you can tap into this too. Transcendent morality. It's a really cool thing. Transcendent morality, what it is it's just a pure consciousness of what is true, of reality. So it's not morality at all. There is no morality. It's just being fully open to reality. Existentially, if you ever open yourself fully to reality, if you become the ocean rather than the hole in the ocean, what will happen is that the universe, you'll see, the universe is totally free. Totally free. What there is in the universe is not a set of rules and laws. These are human contrivances. These are egoic inventions designed to manipulate people. What there really is there just is what is. There is being. That's all there is. All of reality consists of being. And of course, also the source of being, which is nothingness, but that's another discussion for another time. So we'll just say that all there is being, right? Being is basically, you might call that experience, raw direct experience as you perceive it. Let's call that being for now. It's a bit simplistic, but let's just call that being. So that's what there really is. And this being is completely neutral. It's so utterly neutral and lawless that you can't even call it neutral. To call it neutral would already be putting a charge on it, right? The universe is totally free. So the universe does whatever it wants to do, and every actor in the universe is basically doing whatever they want to do. And there are no rules as to what is good or what is evil. And in fact, these categories of good and evil do not exist. These are conceptual creations of the ego. You actually had to create good and evil. You had to create this when you were a small child. This concept had to enter into your mind. You created it largely unconsciously, because you didn't know what the hell you were doing. And it was useful to you at the time. So you created it because it served a certain utility for you, right? But the problem with fictions is the same problem as with lies. You know, lies always come back to haunt you. And so do fictions. And so do all your mental creations. And the problem is that you've fragmented, like I said, this unity. When you realize this and you take efforts to stop doing that, and then you actually become one with the unity of the universe as it is, then what you realize is that there are no shoulds at all. At all. Like, really, at all. What is what should be. Let me repeat that. What is exactly what should be. Or what should be is exactly what is. Now, this is the most bitter pill, one of the most bitter pills I'm ever going to ask you to swallow. But it's also so fucking powerful if you grasp this and you understand what I'm saying here. This is actually a concept that I got from Byron Katie. Very, very foundational concept. My next episode is going to be about this. I'll tell you more about this and how your shoulds, how the should statements that you create in your life, you know, I should do this, I should do that, that person shouldn't do this. These are all should statements, right? Normally what happens is that we say, well, you know, people shouldn't steal money from other people. People shouldn't be thieves. And then, but what reality tells us is that people actually are thieves. And also we tell ourselves, well, people shouldn't be Nazis. You know, Nazis shouldn't exist, and, you know, pedophiles and rapists shouldn't exist, and Republicans shouldn't exist, and Democrats shouldn't exist, and, you know, children shouldn't eat candy, that shouldn't exist, and people shouldn't have too much sex, that shouldn't exist, and people shouldn't be so materialistic, that shouldn't exist, people should be more spiritual, so more spirituality should exist. So you have all these fucking fantasies about what should and shouldn't exist. Do you see the problem with that? what you think should or shouldn't exist has no fucking bearing on reality. Reality is what is. It's what exists. And what you feel should exist or shouldn't exist is your own fucking problem. So all that needs to happen is you need to drop your fantasies about what reality should be like. And then there are no more problems. And I mean this in all of its ramifications, in a very broad, very radical sense. So I literally mean that there should be rape and murder, and there should be pedophiles, and there should be Nazis, and there should be communists, and there should be terrorists, and there should be all of this. Why? Because they exist. When they stop existing, and they might, we might reach a point in 10,000 years where these things no longer exist. If that happens, then that's what should be. At that time. Not now. At that time. When it happens. But right now, if we have murderers and rapists and pedophiles and terrorists, that's what should be. It's only the ego's arrogance that has the gall to say of reality, no, you know what? You know what? You know, wait a minute. Let's stop all of the fucking functioning of the whole universe because I am offended by a pedophile. That's the ego's arrogance, right? So to get to transcendent morality, what has to happen is you have to let go, surrender to what's actually real, not to what you want, not to what you think would be best for you or your loved ones or humanity, but for what's actually real. It's very simple, but it's also very radical, right? You just have to come to this realization at some point where you notice that, holy fuck, reality is exactly how it should be. And when you can grasp that, that's when moralizing stops and transcendent morality begins. But that's a difficult place to get to. Because one of the things you have to recognize to get to this place is that you can't judge anyone anymore. If you ever accept and grasp what I'm telling you, and it's not just something you accept or believe, it's something you have to grasp. You have to see that this is real, that it's true. You cannot believe this. You have to see it to believe it. It's unbelievable. But if you actually see it and grasp it, what you'll discover is that, shit, you can't judge anyone anymore. You can't ever point your finger at anyone anymore. Ever. No matter how evil you might want them to be. You cannot look at a terrorist and call him evil anymore. You can't. It's just like it's preposterous at that point, right? Because clearly you're looking at terrorists. So, I mean, he's real. He's right there. He's chopping someone's head off. So you're looking at it. So, I mean, it's fucking real. So your only option is to deny that. You're either going to accept that or you're going to deny that. Now, if you deny it, you're going to have to work a lot. You know, you're going to have to bend over backwards to deny that. You're going to have to do all sorts of mental gymnastics and rationalizations and theories and cosmologies and religious scriptures are going to have to be brought in and justifications and this and that. A whole thing is going to have to be built up. And what you're doing is you're digging a hole in the middle of a fucking ocean. And the water's just going to come and crash and collapse that thing. Because you're fighting against reality. You're going to also have to admit that there's no free will. You understand this? There is no free will. You're going to have to admit that because if reality is exactly as it should be, reality is one unified flow. There's no possibility of any other possibility of reality. Do you see this? It's not like, oh, well, you know, we could live in a reality where there were no terrorists. No, we couldn't. There's only one reality. What you're talking about is a fantasy. Not a reality. Or you could say, well, I can imagine a reality where I woke up yesterday on time instead of 10 minutes late. No, that's a fucking fantasy. That's a fantasy. The reality is that you woke up 10 minutes late. And that's exactly what is, and that's exactly what should have been. Why? Because it happened. And there's no alternate universes here. There's no alternate possibilities. What reality is, in this exact moment, is all that it could ever have been. There's no other possibilities. That's what total surrender of the ego means. The whole purpose of fighting to protect your ego is to maintain a sense of limited control and free will over reality. You see this? That's the whole function of the illusion of the ego. So that you could say, but if I just was a little bit more motivated, if I worked a little bit harder, I'd have a little bit more money in my bank account, or I would have woken up on time, or, if I was just a little bit more religious, then maybe I wouldn't have had sex with that guy at the bar last night. The ego fights for control over something it has zero control over. And that's where most of your suffering comes from. That's why you're stressed. That's why you're guilty. That's why you're suffering. That's why you're a victim. This is a very counterintuitive thing, because when people hear about this, they say, well, Leo, so you're telling me to just be a victim of life. It's like anything goes now. Anything goes, and just like, what? I can't do anything? You're telling me, how can I even do personal development now? You can still do everything. But whatever you do, whatever it is, whether you do it or don't, it's how it should have been. Right? And you're not really doing it. The whole universe is doing it. It's doing you. You're not doing it. When you realize that, what'll happen is that you'll have true compassion for people. Not just people, but animals, everything, everything. Because what happens when you melt the ego into reality, everything becomes unified, is that there's just universal awe and appreciation for reality as it is. You love reality so much that you see that what life is just reality loving itself. This is called universal or divine love. This is what the religious scriptures talk about as God's divine love. This is it. This is it. God is the universe. If you don't like the label God and you're a scientifically minded person, call it fucking nature. Call it universe. Call it quarks. Call it atoms. It doesn't matter what you call it. What you're experiencing right now is it. Not some bearded man in the clouds kind of deal. That's a fantasy. What's happening right now, as I'm speaking to you, this is reality. You're in it right now. You're conscious. This is it. Now, the question is, are you going to love it or are you going to hate it? Are you going to resist it or are you going to go flow with it and surrender to it? Are you going to be reality working with itself, or are you going to be the whole reality struggling against itself? See, you might think that by giving up the notion of free will, that this constrains you and takes away all your freedom. Actually, the exact opposite. Right now, you're constrained. You're constrained by this fruitless struggle for control over something you have no control over. That's a recipe for hell, and there's no freedom in that. What I'm speaking about here is a complete paradigm shift, a radical freedom, totally radical freedom, because there are no more rules. That means anything goes. Anything. You can go and kill your neighbor if you want to. Anything fucking goes. And that's so radical that if you've been moralizing your whole life, this is like poison to you. This is total poison. You're probably calling me a devil right now. Yeah, it's interesting because, mystics, the people who have transcendent morality, these are called mystics or saints or sages. These people throughout history, they have been demonized and burned at the cross or at the stake or stoned to death or exiled out of town. Why? Because of this. Why do you think Jesus was nailed to a fucking cross? Why was Muhammad's tribe fighting with all the neighboring tribes who tried to kill him? Because of this. Because of this. What religious morality is an aping of transcendent morality. It's an aping. So when you're acting moral, you're acting. True morality is no morality. Now that's radical. That, think about how much responsibility that takes. So much fucking responsibility. You have to be conscious every second of your life in that case, because you have total freedom to do whatever you want. You can go murder your children. There's nobody stopping you. And the desire to have somebody or something stop you is what an unconscious, undeveloped, immature ego needs. See, the immature ego reasons like this. It says, well, if there's no rules stopping people from murdering each other, then we're going to go all murder each other. And there's going to be anarchy. Yes, if you assume that everyone is deeply unconscious and are totally selfish bastards, then yes, that will happen. So for unconscious people, they need mechanical rules. In the same way that a herd of cattle needs to be corralled by cowboys and by fences and posts and barbed wire. There might be usefulness to that if you're very, very unconscious, but if you're watching my content, then probably you're a little bit more conscious than the average person, and also probably you're interested in developing your consciousness a little bit more, and maybe you even want to get to this transcendent morality stage. Maybe you actually want to tap into some of the higher wisdom that sages and saints have taught throughout human history. Maybe you want to tap into that. Maybe you care about self-actualizing. Maybe you care about reality and truth, in which case you're going to be raising your consciousness, and in which case you're going to be taking full responsibility for your life anyways. And for the conscious person, they don't need a rule. I don't need a rule not to kill my children. Or I don't even need a rule not to kill someone who's stolen from me. I don't need a rule for that. In fact, it's funny, you know, sometimes people will leave me comments and be like, well, you know, but what's going to happen without rules, Leo? And, you know, you're talking about, you know, dropping the ego and becoming this kind of ascetic, living this ascetic minimalistic lifestyle. You know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to society? You know, what's going to happen to people doing evil stuff? And, you know, all these rules are going to get broken. I'll just be very honest with you. Since I was like, even before a teenager, I had no morality. And I have no morality now. I have nothing that I hold as sacred. There is no belief or rule that I hold as sacred. And in that time, you know, from being a young teenager through my 20s and now into my 30s, I'm not saying this as like some kind of self-righteous tooting my own horn, but I'm just saying that I'm more moral and ethical than almost anyone that I'll meet. And I have no fucking morality. Okay, if you go into my mind, there are no, I mean, I do moralize to myself, but I mean, like, I don't have strict rules for, like, I shouldn't murder somebody, or I shouldn't steal somebody, or I shouldn't rape somebody, or I shouldn't rip somebody off, or I shouldn't lie to somebody. I don't have those kinds of rules. I mean, I still moralize to myself. I have a bunch of should statements. I'm working on those, right? I'm working on that stuff. I'm kind of eating my own dog food here. I'm taking my own advice. All the advice I'm telling you here, I'm using on myself. But I don't have rules for like these very severe things that I can't. I don't have the Ten Commandments in my mind, nor do I need it. I don't need it. It's so much more freeing to be without it. And I never have the temptation to rape somebody or to murder somebody. This never comes to me. Not only that, at this point, you know, I don't even get angry at people. Like, I don't even get angry at people. Like, something very radical would have, like, very severe would have to happen for me to really get angry at somebody. Whereas, you know, the average person gets angry on the drop of a fucking dime. You know, I see people, I drive with friends or other people sometimes in traffic, and I see them get pissed off at fucking traffic, at traffic. So yeah, this whole notion that you need morality and a firm set of rules to tell you to live some way and, you know, to keep evil at bay, this is preposterous. This is what an immature, childish mind needs. Now you might wonder, why then, Leo, is this stuff not more widespread? What you're talking about? Why is it not, you know, being shouted from the rooftops? Why isn't everyone following this kind of transcendent morality? And the reason is because this requires massive development of consciousness. You need to see reality for what it is. This is not a belief system. This is not another set of rules. This is not a dogma. You don't just take what I told you and say, okay, so Leo told me now that I shouldn't do this and I shouldn't do that. Don't turn into another set of rules. This takes massive self-actualization work, years of it, decades of it. It'll take you decades to really embody this. So that's why it's not very widespread. It's also incredibly threatening to the ego. Incredibly threatening. It's incredibly counterintuitive. It requires a full commitment to truth and reality versus your own self agenda. A full commitment. Which is, by the way, true religion. That's what true religion is this. But of course, like most things in society, what is true and what actually we have are almost the opposite. Right? So religious people are the exact opposite of truly religious. And another reason it's not more widespread is because it's not politically viable. Could you imagine someone in a public political position coming out with this kind of view? They would get crucified. 300 to 500 years ago, if I said what I'm saying now, I would have been burned at the stake, like literally, right? So it's only by virtue of the fact that we're living in the 21st century that that's even possible. If I said this even 50 years ago, I probably would have been called a communist and fucking put in jail. Okay. And all my videos would be taken down, and like it would just be the end of it, right? The end of it. So you got to realize that our society is not as advanced as you think it is. So don't expect the things that I tell you, some of the deepest things I tell you, they will not be reflected in mainstream society. In fact, it'll be the opposite. The things I tell you will be the exact opposite of what you see promoted in mainstream society. Because this shit is scary. This shit is very threatening. Now, let me just tackle a couple of final objections, and then I'll wrap this up. So, one very common objection is something like, but Leo, you know, you've opened Pandora's box here. What is going to guarantee that people do not commit evil under this system that you're advocating? And the answer is nothing. Nothing will guarantee it. But also recognize that nothing guarantees that people don't commit evil anyways. And in fact, the more that you moralize and preach, the more you embolden evil. This thing you call evil, because the way to destroy evil is not by fighting it, but by integrating it. A great quote that I love is, love your sins to death. That's what's truly religious, is to love your sins to death, not to demonize your sins and to reject them. Because the more you reject them, the more sinful you will be. When you love them to death, eventually you reach the point where there are no more sins. There's only love. So, again, very counterintuitively and sort of paradoxically, integrating evil integrating your shadow is the best strategy to minimize evil, if that's what your main concern is here. But also, more fundamentally, recognize that the thing you call evil, this thing is just, it doesn't exist. It's an egoic judgment. It's pure arrogance. To call something evil is pure fucking arrogance. Arrogance and delusion. There is no such thing. Your mind creates it as a mental label. What evil is, the existential reality of evil is a thought. That's what literally evil is. It's a thought. In your mind. Not out in the real world. Okay. And then another objection people might have is something like, well, Leo, but, you know, wouldn't you get upset if I went and killed your whole family? Wouldn't you get upset by that? Seems like you're being very hypocritical here. And the answer is interesting. The answer is both yes and no. So, of course, you know, if you come and do harm to me or to someone I care about or to my business or something like that, of course, on some level, I'm going to get upset by that because you're kind of harming my self-agenda. And of course, my ego doesn't want to be harmed. I'm not saying I'm perfect here. Don't take it that way. Don't take this, what I'm saying, don't take this as another moralization. Don't frame it that way. This has nothing to do with moralizations. So, of course, I would be distraught to a certain extent, but also, and this here now is going to be a true measure of my emotional maturity and development. My self-actualization is the degree to which I won't get distraught when you harm me. And I don't know, you know, I haven't put this to the test. If someone killed my whole family, I don't know how I'd feel about it. But I think I'm at the point now, trying to be accurate, I'm at the point now where, yes, I would be distressed, and of course I would have negative emotions and stuff, but I wouldn't be at the point where I would be, like, demonizing that person, right? I would see this as a function of the entire motion of the universe. And so the mature attitude would be, because it is, that's how it should be. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to be happy about it, but I don't think I would be like, oh, that person is evil, and, you know, he shouldn't have done that, and da-da-da-da-da-da, all that stuff. I'd like to think that I would be that way. And if I can't be that way right now, because, you know, I'm not perfect, I'm far from perfect, I will get to that point. I don't know how long it'll take me. Maybe it'll take me a couple of years, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years. But within 10 years, I could probably get to that point. And I will, if I'm still alive. Just all I need is just time to develop myself, because every week, every month, I'm growing by leaps and bounds by taking my own advice. You think this shit I talk about is just for you? No, it's mostly for me. It's not for you. I'm doing this out of selfish motive. So yeah, that's actually a very good litmus test to see how developed you are is, you know, when someone really does harm to you, how accepting of it are you? How loving of it are you? That's a really good test. Really tough test, right? It really means that you've grown yourself if you can pass such a test. So in conclusion, my claim here is that traditional morality is based on neurosis and that it does more harm to you than good. So you've come to the point, hopefully in your life, that you are ready to let go and you're ready to become fully conscious and you're ready to open your mind to some radical new counterintuitive paradoxical seeming possibilities, and you recognize that what has gotten you here will not get you there. Yeah? What has gotten you to your level of success now is not going to be the same paradigm that will take you to the self-actualized life. You need to change paradigms. And a lot of times changing paradigms is scary because it feels like you're taking a step backwards. And yeah, you know, for a few months, for a year, maybe even, it'll feel like a step backwards, but then you'll see that it was a smart decision. The self-actualized person is at the same time the most moral and the least moral. Now that's a paradox for you to ponder. Think about how truly weak your morality is if you need a rule or an external authority or God or the Bible or some social contract or even a principle, a logical, reasonable principle, like a Kantian fucking principle. If you need something like that to be moral, how weak is your morality really? Ask yourself that. The true source of morality is reality. It's unconditional love for absolutely everything, with no exceptions and no arrogance from yourself. All right, I'm signing off. Go ahead, please click the like button for me on this. Post your comments down below. I do like to read them, especially on controversial topics like this. Share it with a friend, please. And lastly, come check out actualize.org right here. This is my website and my newsletter. Sign up to the newsletter. It's free. I'm going to have some goodies and exclusive stuff for my newsletter subscribers coming up soon. Keeps you on track with the self-actualization journey. What's going to come next week, I think, is I'm going to release a episode that's going to be a follow-up to this one, which is going to specifically talk about how to take what I talked about here, because here it was kind of, I was pretty abstract and kind of lofty, you know, giving you the very big picture. I'm going to talk about how your should statements, how your practical moralizing is creating guilt, shame, and self-hatred. And that's going to be a very practical episode, which is going to take everything we talked about here and kind of be a part two to that. And it's going to show you how to implement it. And this one change right here could be a significant change to the quality of your life. This is such a huge, such a foundational, such an important topic, and I haven't really covered it before. So make sure you stay tuned. All right, I'll see you soon with more.